Right, welcome one and all to DCN podcast number 170. Of course, we're here to talk movies, TV and streaming, comic books and other news as well. And with me, as always, is my brother-in-arms, the other half of this particular dynamic duo, Brad Fantastic Felicki. How are you, my brother?
Hey, I'm good, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm really, really cool. We've got some great news, but we have to start with a little bit of not so great news with the sad passing of one of the last remaining Silver Age greats, Joe Giella. This one's hit me because a lot of the comics I read as a kid, the Batman series in particular, which were at the height of Adam West's tenure, were very dear to me. And this guy has inked legends. So how can we talk about the legend that was Joe Giella?
Yeah, it's hard. And it's a shame that we're losing, so many of these artists, yeah, writers that were around at such a pivotal time for comics. I remember when I was in college, I had a history professor, and this was Troy Major, was back in the 90s. He would say, if you know any World War One veterans, talk to them now.
Absolutely.
Losing them. And I feel like that is where we are with some of these comic legends, especially, you know, the ones that are around in the 40s, the Greatest Generation, who brought so much to the comics, who basically started off the whole thing. I mean, we as comic fans, but we as pop culture fans owe them so much. We're so much in their debt for what they created and what they started, and really what they got paid was not anything compared to the influence that they had, and that's a shame. But it's good that we still have a few. So if you see them in cons, go out and see them, hear their wisdom and their stories. And you know, like you were saying, he was an inker during the time in comics where I think a lot of people got into Batman, and I think a lot of people that influenced us as fans who were writing and drawing comics when we started were influenced by him and that generation. So this was definitely quite a loss.
It's very sad, but if you look at his work, his body of work, and the longevity of his career, starting when Marvel was still timely back in the 40s, that's incredible. But if you look at his body of work when he moved over to DC in the Silver Age, and the characters whose work he literally launched, the Flash, Green Lantern, he inked Alex Toth, Gil Kane, the legendary Batman artist Carmine Infantino, and the legendary Flash artist. So it's a tragic passing, but hey, I pray I get to 94, and yeah, the things this guy saw, the things this guy did cannot be understated. So to his friends, to his colleagues, to his family, to those who knew him, all our love, all our condolences, and yeah, we've lost another one of the greats. So Joe Giella, we salute you. Yeah, glad to get that story out of the way, but it had to be said, one of the very best there was. But let's not dwell on the past, because we know that comic books travel from past to present to future, and let's talk about the modern day and what's going on right now with our first bit of movie news in your hometown of New York. Great filming going on for the second Joker movie, Folie à Deux, and pictures of Lady Gaga, finally, not just as Harley Quinzel, but as the Mistress of Mayhem, Harley Quinn. What do you make of these set photos and the videos and stuff we've seen so far?
Yeah, I'm loving it. I love her look as Harley Quinn. It's kind of understated, but definitely feels like Harley Quinn. I love the eye makeup was a really nice touch. I love these little snuck videos and pictures that they're releasing. I think that's, and I said this to Kendra last week, I think it's so much fun to watch these little snippets and try to guess what's going on. I'm excited. What about you?
what really makes me laugh is the reaction of some so-called fans online, where they're just literally ripping it apart. They say, that's not Harley Quinn. Look back at Joaquin Phoenix's makeup in the first Joker movie. Look at his costume. There's no bright purples there. It's makeup he's wearing. He isn't scarred for life by acid and chemicals. His hair hasn't been bleached green. This is a world much closer to our own. And I'm sorry, there are enough touches there. And you are the man when it comes to my opinion about fashion. I think these looks are fantastic. They're real. Yeah, they're grounded.
That screams Harley Quinn. If I saw that person walking, I would say, oh, she's doing Harley Quinn cosplay. So how can anybody sit there and say that's not Harley Quinn? That's ridiculous.
It's the same people we always hear about being DC fans who are just quick to knock anything DC, even after the Oscar-winning success of the first Joker movie. So for me, listen, don't like it, don't watch it. I see Harley Quinn there. I see an Oscar-winning actress there. I see an Oscar-winning actor. I see a director whose writing and whose work so far has always impressed me. So this just got me really excited. I think the costumes look great. The acting talent's great. If the script's as good as it was in the first film, we're in for another really amazing piece of cinema. And as the following story suggests, big blockbuster events too. Arkham Asylum on fire. These shots were really cool as well. What did you make of those?
Oh, yeah, they were really, really cool. This, I think, is obviously something that's probably going to happen in the end of the film or towards the end. But this is another one of those things. I just love these little leaks that we're getting. We just have to play guesswork. And I'm so glad they're not taking them down. They're just letting them percolate and get out there. One thing that drew my eye in the article itself is the fact that they still are calling it a musical. That I'm still kind of interested in what that means. I mean, obviously you have Lady Gaga, who is obviously a great singer, great musician, so she can handle it. I just wonder, is that going to be part of it? Is that going to be the whole thing? Is it going to be a full-fledged musical? Because if that's the case, wow, that's a super bold move. So I just, this film has just got me so absolutely curious about what it's actually going to be. What about you?
Absolutely. I'm hoping it's going to be more operatic, because that's the feeling I'm getting. And if we've got the same kind of level of musical score, because you and I both raved and probably continue to rave about the score for the first Joker movie, it's something that's still on my playlist on my MP3 player. I play it back constantly. It's fantastic mood music. So if that's the case, yeah, I'm really happy. But I'm also really intrigued by the fact that, as you said, this stuff is coming online and it's staying online. And this is fans taking these shots, people on set. But let's be fair here. It's creating buzz. It's free advertising.
At the end of the day,
I mean, you and I, and I swear I could probably hear Kendra screaming in the background when she saw the Harley Quinn costume and seeing these photos and videos from the set. So fans with cell phones, oh man, I wish I could be there with you, because we were lucky with the filming of the Batman that it happened in the UK, and I got a few scoops with that. But you're in New York, Brad. If you get a chance to wander around and see some filming tomorrow, dude, hit me up with your shots too. No.
And I'm in New Jersey, too. And actually, I get a lot of news updates for Bergen County. And some of them involve, the Joker is shooting in Belleville. And actually, a good friend of mine lives in Belleville. So I would say, if you see them filming, you got to take some shots. You got to figure out what's going on. But yeah, it's pretty big news around me. So, and that just makes me more
so
excited.
So jealous. Yeah. So jealous. That's another reason I wish I was on your side of the pond right now. Brilliant. Yes, the buzz is definitely getting hyped. Speaking of hyped, a couple of weeks ago, it was pretty early in last week, actually, wasn't it, when Zack Snyder posted that cryptic video with Darkseid commenting full circle. And now we know Snyder and his antics are hitting the media again. And I don't care what anyone says. For me, the Zack Snyder trilogy is some of the finest superhero films ever made. I love all three movies. People love them or hate them. I'm one of the people who love them. I'm not a Zack Snyder soldier or one of these militant Snyder fans who wants the whole world to revolve around him, but I think he's a hugely talented filmmaker. And I wish I could got a chance to see these three films again back to back over a Snyder convention. So what do you make of this news?
Yeah, man, this could be funny. I got to hand it to Zack Snyder. He could be bitter and resentful of the way the whole thing played out, not want anything to do with DC. But what does he do? He gives his support to James Gunn, and he hosts a whole convention around his DC movies. That's a sign of good character. And not only that, but they are donating money to suicide
prevention. That's the one. Amazing.
Amazing thing. If I could, I would definitely go. I am interested to see, you know, they mentioned in the article that they might figure out some way to live stream the panels and all that. That I would look into. That seems like it would be pretty cool. But yeah, I just got to hand it to Zack Snyder. And, you know, it's just, I'm glad people like Zack Snyder, you know, because it seemed like there was a time when no matter what he did, people would tear it apart. And at least people are coming around, and he doesn't have to go back to even anything DC because he's got all these other projects through Netflix,
Star Wars as well.
Yeah. So, you know, good for him. I'm glad. If I could, I would go. What about you?
Absolutely. If I had the chance, I'd be there, but it just shows that the man's a class act. A horrible tragedy, which I wouldn't wish upon anybody, befell this guy, and he's just done nothing but try and do good with it. The loss of his daughter must have been, what can you say? No parent should ever lose a child. But the fact that he's using that tragedy to bring awareness to help people who might be in a similar situation, and he's doing it through his art. I mean, that to me just screams class act. Yeah, he's completely behind the new regime at DC. And I still say never, he's too talented a filmmaker to be ignored for too long. And dude, can you imagine what someone like Zack Snyder can do with someone like James Gunn, with the full might of Warner Brothers and DC behind him? More power to him, I say. While I'm sad that I won't be able to attend, if they can live stream some of this stuff the same way they did DC Fandome, awesome. I'm right there. Now, speaking of a certain Mr. Gunn, I love the way this guy's so active on social media. He's shooting down naysayers left, right, and center, and another rumor has been debunked. No new Superman yet, but more news coming. What do you think of this story?
Man, poor James Gunn. He took on a huge job. Not only does he have to write a film, direct a film, has to work on casting, but he's got to put out fires, and because people are just... like we said, there's a lot of people out there that just want to tear down DC movies. He's got to stop rumors that might hurt the production or future. He's just got it's a big job. That when it comes to things like social media, it doesn't have to be that hard. But you have toxic fans and all this. So kudos for him, and I'm glad that he is talking and releasing news when he can, because I think that's pretty important these days because of all these rumors and all the kind of negativity that gets thrown towards DC movies. It's good that he's fighting back.
Yeah, so absolutely. I'm just glad that he's paying attention, because if he's out there talking about these films, that means he's listening. And I do honestly think that this is a guy, being an artist and being first and foremost, like you and I, a comic book fan, he just wants to get the best stories out there and makes the best films he can. So great. Shoot down these naysayers, shoot down these rumors, get the truth out there, get these films made. That's all anyone can really ask for. So I'm right behind that 100%. Absolutely. And this one's got me very excited. I've been a fan of the Blue Beetle forever. We did get Charlton Comics in the UK, and we've got to think that Dan Garrett, the original Blue Beetle, has been around since the Golden Age, since 1939, the same year that Batman was introduced. Then we've got Ted Kord, a character we both love, and now Jaime Reyes, the Latino. Blue Beetle is getting a big screen movie, and I cannot wait to see it. So what do you think of the latest news from the set of Blue Beetle?
I wish we had more of a date. I just wish it wasn't coming soon. You know, I really want to see what this film is going to be, because we haven't really seen pictures or anything really of what it's going to be or what it's going to look like that I can recall. I might have missed something that slipped through the cracks, but I haven't seen any.
A few stills of the costume came up when we were on hiatus before the show came back. Do look them up because they're great.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking forward to this. Like we said, we both love Ted Kord, and I love Jaime Reyes too as a character. And I'm glad that we're having them both. I just wish it was more of a there with the story. I wish we had like, oh, it's coming out on this date. But I'm also just glad that we live in a world where we're getting a Blue Beetle big screen movie. If you would have said this when I was reading Justice League International and loving the character way back then, I would have laughed in your face. Even if you would have told me when the Jaime Reyes character took over, when I was reading that comic years and years later, I wouldn't have believed you. So, it's coming out. And it's one of those things that I get Mr. Cynical when things are announced that I don't know if they're ever going to see the light of day. This one was one that I was cynical about. And here we are. So that's good. So yeah, I can't wait to see the trailer.
So, the great thing with it, yeah, I completely agree. I wasn't as worried with Blue Beetle because this is a film with zero connection to what came before, and if it had minor rewrites, could phase those out. So I knew, unlike Batgirl, that this one would probably go ahead. And with a new, young, fresh character, the whole diversity issue with the Latinx main star, this is something that is brilliant to have out there for comics fans and for movie fans. And this will get more people reading the book. The current new miniseries, which is being released in both English and Spanish, is superb. I'm reading it in both languages. And the fact is, by the same creative team in both languages, means it loses nothing in translation. So if they can get that kind of audience participation, audience love for the Blue Beetle movie, I am in 100%, and I'm so looking forward to it. I hope it's a massive success. Really looking forward to it. Now, one film that I think even the naysayers have to shut up about, particularly after the trailers and after comments from everyone at DC, and celebrities like Tom Cruise who've seen the film. The Flash movie rating has been confirmed and the reasons behind it, but the buzz is just growing and growing. What do you think of this story?
Yeah, I think it's crazy that Tom Cruise is saying that he loves it. That's the first I had heard of that. So that's, I mean, say what you will, but he's one of the most bankable stars. And to have him on your side is pretty impressive. As far as the PG-13 rating, well, that's no surprise. You're not going to get a rated R Flash, and I think a PG Flash would be too kiddie. That's a bad thing. I mean, if you were going to give me a PG Shazam movie, oh yeah, absolutely. But this, so PG-13 makes complete sense, and that wasn't a surprise to me at all. Partial nudity, well, you know, I think that's probably going to be a little overstated in the description than what we're really gonna see. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. But I think that, yeah, this wasn't a surprise to me at all.
Yeah, that whole partial nudity thing is just to get fans thinking, oh, is that what DC have to resort to? No, it's probably just Barry Allen first getting his powers and friction burning all his clothes off and then having to realize that he needs to make a friction-proof suit, as we saw in Justice League. It's just common sense things like that. The buzz behind this movie, regardless of Ezra Miller's shenanigans offset, means that one phase of the DC Universe will close. This will be the final chapter of what was called the Snyderverse and the beginning of something new, but in a way that does unite both, the same way the DC Universe is united, even though it's been going for 80 plus years from the Golden Age, Silver Age, Bronze Age to now. The constants have been characters like the Flash. Before now, we would have had a Batman movie and a Superman movie in a few years, but the fact now we've had Wonder Woman, Shazam, now we've got The Flash, Aquaman, we're getting a Blue Beetle movie, like you said. If anyone had told us that 10, 15 years ago, we'd never would have believed it. So I see this being the first step on a road for people to see that, yeah, DC movies are going to take over and smash it. Or I hope so, because I think they deserve it. The oldest characters, longest running characters, the ones that everyone came from, began at DC, so I love them for always. And speaking of Shazam, the digital release date has been released, and it's in about 3 weeks' time. Very disappointed, because though I haven't seen it on the big screen yet, I will go and pay to see Shazam Fury of the Gods in the cinemas, but we're going to get it in the middle of April. What do you make of this story?
I'm a bit torn because, you know, I wish it could have done better the first weekend at the box office, and maybe that would have caused that to be pushed back. But I hope that it finds a better life when it does go digital and people can watch it at home. I hope people discover it that way. I hope it's a way to make some more money, because of course it's not getting the best reviews, but there was actually a lot that I liked about it. One thing in particular is that I think it gave balance to all the characters. You got to see all of them just the amount of time that you needed in both forms. And that's, when you're dealing with that many characters, that's something that's pretty hard to do. So anyway, I digress, I guess. But I just wish there was, you know, a way that this could, you know, putting it out early helps it make money, so it's not something that's seen as a bomb, you know, because I think it deserves better at the end of the day.
You've seen it and you liked it. In fact, most of the people across the three websites I work for have seen it, and I haven't heard anyone say anything bad about it. They say it's a good, fun, action superhero movie. That's what you want, and at the end of the day, that's all the Marvel movies are. So what are people wanting? What are the people saying? I mean, again, I just think it's this horrible DC backlash. Why does it happen? And people enjoyed the first one. People loved the first Wonder Woman. People loved the first Aquaman film. So why? I do believe as well, though, that the marketing and the publicity for the film hasn't been everything it could have been. DC Comics are doing more to publicize the film than Warner Brothers are, with the covers for virtually every DC book having a Shazam alternative to push the film. Yeah, I'm just baffled why it hasn't done better.
Yeah, Warner Brothers just doesn't know what they're doing sometimes. You know, I mean, I hate to say that, but we've seen that again and again and again. It's funny that you were saying, you know, anybody who's seen it has not said anything bad about it to you. And that's the case with me too. Now, I notice not only when I saw it in the theater was the theater pretty crowded, but a lot on social media, a lot of my friends were posting, oh, taking the kids to see Shazam, seeing Shazam, and oh, it was good. You know, so people went out and saw it. The fact that it made so little kind of surprised me, because to me, it was all over my social media, people going to see it. So yeah, it's a shame.
But it's baffling.
I mean, give it a chance. Give it a chance if you haven't. That's what I would say. It's not. I don't think it's bad as the media is making it out to be in a way, or the reviews say. I don't think it's as bad.
Never is. Absolutely. Well, that brings us to the end of our big screen news. But Brad, let's talk TV now. And I know that the next story is definitely right up your street. Let's talk about TV.
Yeah, so we got a view of the new Tim Drake Robin costume in the final episodes of Titans. Looks pretty cool. What do you think of it?
It's brilliant. It does remind me of when Tim Drake launched in his own costume, the first real variation from Dick Grayson's original, which ran from the Golden Age straight through to the post-crisis era. To see a costume so similar to the one in the comic books is just great. And people always knock TV versions of comic book costumes, but for me, I think Titans has had a far higher hit rate than a fail rate. This costume looks great. I'm really excited about it, but I also want to hear your thoughts on the Brother Blood costume, because for me, they scream Titans of the 80s and the Robin comics of the 90s. So I'm really, really looking forward to actually seeing these on screen and in action. So you, as our fashion guru, must have an opinion.
I like that. I'll start off with Baron Blood. I think it was very smart to go to the 80s route, I think, with him, because I think that the 80s run of Titans is legendary. It's the one that ran head-to-head with Chris Claremont's run on X-Men. Those were the two books to get. So I think that those left such a lasting impression that they influenced a lot of the Titan stuff that became popular after it, the TV, like the cartoons and you know. So
it's
smart to use that as a reference point. And as far as Robin goes, you know, these costume designs are really subtle art, because especially when it comes to somebody like Robin, you know, the original Robin's costume is very... it's very hard to make look cool. And over the years, they've really adjusted it, but they made it still feel like a Robin costume. And this does that great. And it's tactical and practical and modern. So it seems real world almost, like something that could almost work in a real world. And whoever designed it, yeah, it's good. I like it. They've done some really smart moves. And it goes to show, I think, that a lot of times costume design will show you if it's going to be a good movie. I've said this before, and I'm going to go back to when I saw Halle Berry's Catwoman costume. I thought,
but
everything I've seen from this has been good, and I think that leans towards it being a good show sometimes, I think. So, yeah, I like this design is cool, and Tim Drake is a character that doesn't get enough respect. He gets overlooked way too much. So I'm glad to see him represented in Titans. So, yep. And on the Titans note, we got a look at a trailer for part 2 of season 4. What do you think of this trailer?
Very exciting. I love the nods, as you quite rightly said, to the 80s New Teen Titans and Tales of the Teen Titans comics, because that shot of Brother Blood emerging from that cauldron of blood is virtually lifted from the Marv Wolfman, George Perez comics. And you know how I feel about those. So that to me is like the ultimate, like, guys, if you're going down that route, I mean, 100% happy. Seeing Jason sparring with Tim, oh man, I wish we'd have had that in the comics, because obviously Tim came in a period in the comics where Jason was dead. So seeing them like brothers and having Dick there as well is just something that, for an aging Batman fanboy, is just something I wish I could have seen. And these Elseworlds, these parallel worlds, these different universes where things are the same but yet slightly different, make for fantastic viewing, because we don't know what's going to happen next. We don't know how things are going to progress. We've got a rough idea, but seeing stuff like that just makes me really, really happy. Brilliant trailer. What did you make of it?
I do think it's a brilliant trailer. It really showed kind of the stakes are high with these last episodes. I'm wondering what's going on with the alternate dimension kind of stuff that could be happening. Baron Blood and Lex teaming up, and Raven's look. There's a lot to look forward to. I think they're going to cram a lot into these last episodes. And that's one thing that Titans did very well as a series. So I think that even though we're only getting 4 seasons, I think it is going to go out on a high note. So I'm looking forward to it. Speaking of trailers, and something I'm looking forward to, is we got a trailer for the second season of Sweet Tooth, which I am absolutely psyched about. What about you?
Great TV, fantastic comic book series. What's there not to be excited about? So original. Children with hybrid animal visages and abilities. it's a universe that brings hope, because so much has gone wrong. But like the old saying goes, like the old song said, the children of the future. So this is the kind of comic book movie and TV show which makes me happy, because it shows that it's not just guys with bulging muscles in spandex beating the living hell out of each other. Comics can be so much more than that. And when you get a creative talent like Jeff Lemire writing comics as well, you know that what you're going to get, if it's faithfully adapted on screen, is going to be magnificent. What can I say about the trailer? What can I say about this story? Brilliant. And no one's knocking this stuff. Why? Because probably people don't even know it's a DC property. And, well, if that's what it takes to make people see it, the first series did really well. Hey, that's why we've got a second season. Fantastic. What did you make of it?
I am really loving DC's Netflix Vertigo adaptations. This is no different. I love the series. Jeff Lemire, he can do no wrong. I mean, he's up there in my echelon with the Alan Moores and Neil Gaimans and Garth Ennis's.
Absolutely.
To the Tom Kings and Tom Taylors, he's up there. I'll read anything with his name on it, and I've never been disappointed. I really loved the comics, and I loved the first season, so I'm really love that we're getting a second season, and we don't have too much longer to wait for. It's coming out sooner than I was expecting. Trailer looks good. Looks like Gus is getting ready to kick some butt and growing up, and that'll be interesting to see. Like you said, what's not to love? I'm really excited. This is probably one of those things that I'll finish pretty quickly, maybe even on that first weekend, or once it comes out, that's definitely gonna go right to the top of my list for sure.
Binge TV, you gotta love it.
Yeah. And speaking of binge TV, we got some interesting news about the final Arrowverse crossover in the final season of The Flash. What did you make of this? You excited?
Arrow changed everything. It was like a Christopher Nolan-esque twist on superhero TV. Before Arrow, the greatest we could hope for would be Smallville, or what was comparable before that. I mean, I grew up with Bill Bixby and Lou Ferrigno. I grew up with Nicholas Hammond as Spider-Man. We didn't have great superhero TV when I was a kid, and now we're getting stuff like Titans. We're getting stuff like Arrow and The Flash, which after 9 years, I mean, think about that, 9 seasons, is finally coming to an end. And what do? Bring back Stephen Amell's Green Arrow. Anything to do with that, I'm invested. Thankfully, I think we're just a week or two behind you in the States. The UK is airing the final season of The Flash. So this is one I can actually sit and watch almost at the same time you guys are watching it. And so far, loving it. And now we know that Stephen's coming back in the middle of the season. Still don't know if it's for one episode or more, but he's coming back. This is the guy who launched the Arrowverse. He needed to be here at the final. Needed to be. So I'm really, really happy. What about yourself?
Yeah, I'm happy too. Not only are we getting Stephen Mel, but we're getting Batwoman. We're getting Dreamer. We're getting characters from the different Arrowverse shows. And I think that is necessary. I think we need to wrap it up with other characters from these shows, because not only was Arrow and Flash really popular, but so was Supergirl. And Batwoman could have been had the Arrowverse continued on longer and there wasn't the drama that happened. So I'm glad to see Batwoman coming back. And I've always been a fan of Stephen Mills. He's loved the show. He's loved his fans. He's loved the worlds that they created in all these shows. So it's fitting that he gets to say goodbye and come back. It wouldn't feel complete if he wasn't part of it. I just don't think they could have done it without him. So I think that it's good, and I think that it's going to be a nice little way to tie everything up with a nice bow and have all these amazing seasons of television throughout the Arrowverse.
Even tie it up with a nice bow and arrow. See what I did there?
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. And we're going to move on to some comic book news. Looks like we're getting a retelling of the first meeting between Batman and Joker with the Brave and the Bold. Now, this sounds interesting. Being such a Batman fan, are you looking forward to this?
Absolutely. This is a story that's been partially told. We've never had the full thing. We had a tease at the end of Batman Year One where, oh, some guy's threatening to poison Gotham Reservoir, calling himself the Joker. And that tease was really reintroduced and copied perfectly at the end of Christopher Nolan's Batman Begins. Then we got The Man Who Laughs, which saw the Joker and Batman fighting. And we know that this happens after Batman faces someone calling himself the Red Hood and falling into a vat of chemicals, which converts him physically into a man that's already been fractured mentally into the Joker. So the fact that we're actually getting this fleshed out over a period of time, not just like a one-off story or a special, and with Tom King writing it, I don't know how many times you and I and the rest of the team have said over the last few years how much we're in if Tom King's involved. When Tom King's involved in a Batman story, a pivotal Batman story, featuring the Joker, I'm a Batman fan, like you said. How can I not be excited? You've got to have an opinion on it.
I do. Well, man, they're calling it the defining Joker story for a generation. And it's written by Tom King. Well, how can
believe the hype?
How can you not want to read that right when it comes out? Will it live up to the hype? Well, because Tom King's behind it, the chances are pretty high that it will. And you know, maybe we are getting to that point where we need another kind of generation defining Batman and Joker story. So yeah, I'm really interested to check this out. And as much as I pulled back from buying monthly issues, this might be one that I do have to get because I really want to see what this is all about. It kind of flashes back into my mind of reading Batman Year One as it actually came out in the comics, knowing it was good, but not realizing it was such a pivotal moment in comics. And hopefully that's what this will end up being, and it looks like it might be. So yeah, I'm all about it. And we also got a look at some of the new costumes for the Rise of DC for Green Arrow and Arsenal. What did you think of these costumes?
Man, I've got to say that these designs are really special for a few reasons. If you hadn't said anything, most fans out there probably wouldn't even know they were redesigns. They are so vintage and classic for all three characters that if you didn't know, you'd think, well, hang on, what's changed? But when you look closely, the tweaks, the updates, the color arrangements, and when you think it's three of the very best, come on, Connor Hawke and Oliver Queen, both Green Arrows, and the other one's at Arsenal, isn't it? Yeah. The three men who are the greatest archers in the DC universe. And finally, we're getting Oliver Queen in his own comic book series again. It's been far too long. I think these designs are great. They're really classic comic book, but functional. And like I said, so subtly and cleverly redesigned. Now, you are a fashion man for this podcast. You know better than I do.
Well, you know, this is definitely one of those hive mind situations, because you hit on a lot of points I was going to make, because it is those tweaks and those color arrangements that make these things so special. And it does seem another one of those practical tactical things, which I like about these designs too, is it seems like they were influenced by things that they've seen in movies and TV shows for superhero costumes. And it's completely really cool how those worlds influence each other. And this is a perfect example of where that can happen in really cool ways. So I really dig these redesigns. And you're right, it's absolutely about the subtlety. And yeah, I'm with you. It's nice to have Oliver Queen back in a book. So yeah, yep. Switching gears a little bit, we got a little preview of what's coming up in Teen Titans, and it looks like one of them may be murdered. So what was your take on this?
it's Tom Taylor. You know someone's going to die. I love it because that cover is so cryptic. You see the Titans and it looks like all of them coming out, rushing out of the building to see a dead body there. And you can't make out whether it's male, female, what they're wearing. And let's be really clear here. There have been dozens of Titans over the years. It could be just about anyone. And if that doesn't get a fan salivating, if that doesn't get a fan excited about this new series, what will? Well, I'll give you what will. Two main reasons. Scripts by Tom Taylor, art by Nicholas Scott. As soon as I heard that was the creative team I was in, the fact that the Titans are starting this series early because they are headlining Nightwing's current series right now with a limited arc with all of the Titans in it trying to save Blockbuster's daughter from demons. I love Tom Taylor. This is great. I tweeted out as soon as I saw this and said, Tom Taylor, you're evil. Keep it up. He thanked me. That's all I care about. I'm reading this. I'm buying this. Brad, what about you?
I keep thinking back that two of my favorite comic stories started as a murder mystery, being Watchmen and Identity Crisis. And like you said, Tom Taylor, he could do something that good. So I'm curious who it's
going
to be. Story is. And to me, the circumstances behind it and the consequences are going to make it a good story more than actually who even the victim is. So, but it's in good hands. So I'm this is another one that I'm looking forward to. I don't have too many negative things to say about DC these days, if you haven't noticed, but you know, like I always say, it's a good time to be a DC fan.
You betcha.
And we're going to go back to some Tom King and Batman news, and looks like he's going to be writing a Penguin story. What did you think of this?
It's about damn time. Penguin, again, is another golden age character, a character who's been plaguing Batman for 80 years. And with a brilliant recent run of stories in Detective Comics where he faked his own death and Batman got the blame for it and he moved off to live a peaceful life. But something's bringing him back to Gotham. Again, Tom King's writing. The two recent Joker series, the first started by James Tynion and now the new one, great. If they can bring that level of sophistication and darkness to a Penguin comic book, what can I say? I think you said it a couple of minutes ago. It's a great time to be a DC fan. Do you agree?
Yes, I do. And it's a great time to be reading DC comics in general. DC comics are still, and the entire, it seems like the entire time that we've been doing this podcast, DC comics have really been in a good spot. That has not dwindled at all. And I Penguin is always a character that I think deserved more respect than he got. So to me, it's good to see this character getting respect between Colin Farrell's performance being so lauded, and then he's getting a whole spin-off series, and now Tom King's writing a whole story about it. So I think he's a character whose time has come. I always think that, you know, Christopher Nolan said he just couldn't get his head around Penguin. Like, you're not trying hard enough. It's not, I mean, you're a genius, Christopher Nolan, but it's not that hard to make a Penguin character intimidating, or a lot of things you could do with that character. So I'm just glad that he's stepping out in the spotlight and not being kind of like a, pardon the pun, but a punchline for a joke. He deserves better. So I'm glad to see it. And I think Tom King, he's in good hands. This is another one that I'm looking forward to.
I mean, the Gotham TV show and Matt Reeves' The Batman movie proved
yes,
Penguin
true.
Can
you know,
be
Gotham. I think
amazing.
That movie where the whole, yeah, I think that's where it started with the kind of a rebirth of Penguin because, what's his name, Robin Lord Taylor did
yes.
a great job on Gotham.
Amazing.
With that great job. So, yeah, absolutely. And looks up with some solicitations for this week. Some Dawn of DC stuff is happening. What's your take on this stuff?
I'm starting to think that the entire comic book realm of DC is going to be ruled and run by two men named Tom Taylor and Tom King. Because here is Mr. King once again. We've got Tom Taylor doing Nightwing and Titans, arguably, even though Titans hasn't even launched yet, two of the biggest selling DC titles, because how can Titans not be with Tom Taylor writing it? But now Tom King's not just doing a Penguin run in of his own, and not only writing the first Batman Joker meeting in the newly launched Brave and the Bold, but he's taking over Wonder Woman with Danielle Samperia with the artwork. Come on. And new creative teams on Harley, new characters, new books. The dawn of DC is shining damn bright. And hey, you said it a few minutes ago. Since we started doing this podcast, DC as comics have been doing very little wrong and very much right. I have to echo those words. And this is proof.
Yeah, that's my thing, is what I love about these Dawn of DC books is that they've chosen really great creative teams. Creative teams that I trust, not only trust to tell good stories, but to work well together and have the art complement the stories. So I think that the dawn of DC is pretty bright. We got a look at some character artwork and little previews at WonderCon for some more of this dawn of DC stuff. And we got shown a lot. What was your take on some of this?
Again, I've got to say that Danielle Semperi's art, what we're seeing from the new Wonder Woman run, and the whole premise of Amazons being outlawed on US after the murder of a high-up person by what seemingly was an Amazon assassin. And I've got to also talk about the return of the Doom Patrol and some of these designed, and the launch of a Beast Girl who they could easily have just made green and a Garfield Logan clone, but she's pink, she's fuzzy, she's adorable, and I cannot wait to read more. I don't know, have you read the first issue of the Unstoppable Doom Patrol yet?
No, not yet.
Okay,
not yet.
I'll shut up then. It's good. It's really good. It's what you said earlier. DC are relaunching some of their best characters, some of the best titles with some of the best creative teams. Yes, we've said it already. I'm going to miss Jeremy Adams on The Flash. He killed it. But what I'm hearing that's coming next sounds awesome. Yes, I'm desperately going to miss Becky Cloonan and Michael Conrad on Wonder Woman. They smashed it. But Tom King and Danielle Samperia, how could you not be excited? Doom Patrol, Green Arrow, Flash, Wonder Woman, Brave and the Bold, Nightwing, the Titans. DC are making amazing comics, and that's what they do better even than the Marvelous competition, who just seem to make good movies and TV shows these days, not great comics anymore.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the upsides of DC movies struggling, is that the comics don't. The comics have been amazing, and I think Marvel can rest on their laurels a little bit because of the MCU. So much is riding on the MCU. DC, the comics are really driving things. And I think that, you know, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a fan that says, I only read DC or I only read Marvel. But I bet if you ask serious comic book readers, they will agree that DC has better comics in general right now. And these new comics look great. Like I said, the creative teams are incredible. I loved the Wonder Woman stuff since Future State. And this
absolutely what we can brilliant.
See here, it's just as good. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens. I agree 100% with the Beast Girl. They could have just done her green, and now, you know, the pink and fuzzy and adorable. I really want to see what that character is going to be. And there's something soulful about the way the art was done for the character too, that I kind of like. There's something there. I like it. I think that, I think again, they're just going to keep going with this record of making really great comics, really strong storytelling. Right now they are just firing on all cylinders. So, yeah, it's a good time to be a DC fan. And with that, that would wrap up another episode of the DC Comics News Podcast.
And what a show it's been, Brad. I love talking to you. Like you said, the hive mind is so strong. And again, Josh, thank you for putting this news list together. A couple of great Finicky Fashions posts there and the man himself. And we had similar thoughts. Great. So that was episode 170. Hope you love listening and watching as much as we've enjoyed making it. Thanks to the whole DC Comics News team. More of us will be joining in future weeks. You can catch this show across Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. You can catch DC Comics News and Dark Knight News on Twitter, Tumblr, Facebook, YouTube as well, at DC Comics News and at DKNews.com. Catch me at LSteevo, or searching Steve J. Ray on Google or your search engine of choice. But Brad, you know what superheroes should look like, and we should know what your writing reads like. Where can the world catch you, my friend?
You can find me writing news reviews, DC Comics News. I can find me on this wonderful podcast. You can follow me on Twitter at FlickyB1. It's FilickyB1. And the number one. And once we get back to recording it, you can find me on the Mad Love Harley Quinn podcast, part of the DC Comics News podcast network. And Steve, I think you have another podcast on that network as well.
I Am the Knight, recorded with my cub, Adam Ray, where we break down every episode of Batman the Animated Series. We're a few episodes into the final season now, but we will be covering the animated movies and maybe even going on to Batman Beyond. So keep listening and keep watching. And until you do, that's been another episode of the DC Comics News Weekly Podcast. But there's something everyone out there needs to do when they're not listening, and that is to
read
more
Comics.
We shall return. Have a great evening.